Undead Gaffigan, I instantly knew. Bacon, cheddar, white bread, 5 patties, 1 for each of my kids, and jalapenos because I'm a hot Latina. Juicy, juicy Lucy. I love Minneapolis, and not just because I enjoy being in cities where I'm not the only pale blonde guy with an oversized head. My head is so large that in middle school I had to use a football helmet from the high school. I don't know why my head is so large. You could store a normal size head inside my head. I like to think my head is like a head case. Okay, I'll stop now. Anyway, whenever I bring my large head to Minneapolis, I always head over, to Matt's bar and get a Juicy Lucy. Then I usually go to the hospital for burns to my mouth. A Juicy Lucy is a cheeseburger where the cheese is, for some reason, cooked inside the burger. I suppose Matt from Matt's bar had the insight. Hey, instead of putting cheese on top of the burger, let's burn people. After all, who doesn't like their cheese at 1,000 degrees, or roughly around the same temperature at which they melt swords? There is another place in Minneapolis called 5-8 Club that also claims to have invented the Juicy Lucy. This Juicy Lucy is pretty much the same, except for there's a different spelling. I guess they did this to distinguish themselves from each other, because they are otherwise identical. Kind of like Protestants and Catholics. Apparently the rivalry between these two Juicy Lucys is rather serious. So I try to eat at both places just to keep the peace. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall inherit the burgers. In case I die, I'm gathering a list of advice for my children. All I have so far is, 1, mustard on a cheeseburger is amazing. 2, ignore lists. French fries, my fair potato. Sometime in the late 1940s, the Geneva Convention declared it a crime against humanity to sell burgers with anything but French fries. Well, they should have. Whenever you get served a cheeseburger with bland-ass potato chips, don't you feel a little ripped off? Where are the French fries? Did your deep fryer break? I better get a discount. A burger and fries together is one of the great culinary marriages of all time. French fries are amazing and, as logic would have it, horrible for you. If you are eating fries, you definitely are treating yourself. I think we should just rename taking vacations eating French fries. French fries are like Crocs. You know you shouldn't, but your life is pretty much over anyway. French fries are deep fried, unquestionably the most important deep fried item ever created. I doubt the inventor of the deep fryer realized the impact his contraption of a heated up bucket of grease would have on the otherwise bland root vegetable. Like a Hollywood rags to riches fairy tale, the deep fryer turned the lowly potato into a food star desired by millions. With all its success, I can't help but feel the French fry still remains one of the more underappreciated food items. I'm not sure if it's the mental block on our part or the fact that they are mostly classified as a side dish, but we don't give enough credit to French fries. French fries are like one of those beautiful images hidden within another image. Often we just don't see the fries. We always want fries with our meal, but we don't realize how important they are to the enjoyment of the meal. Not only are French fries a key element of fast food, they are possibly the one food item keeping most restaurants open. As I calculate, French fries are served with 90% of all non-ethnic entrees. Aside from the obvious pairing with a burger, we serve French fries with everything. Steak, fish, a grilled chicken sandwich, a hot dog, even a gyro. French fries are so good, they changed political thinking. When Congress was furious with the French for refusing to send troops to Iraq, they didn't dare ban the actual French fries. They just changed the name to Freedom Fries. Our government would not let a measly war interrupt their lunch. French fries as an entree. Poutine. I love our North American neighbors, Canada and Mexico. America really scored when you think about it. We could have easily been sandwiched between countries like North Korea and Albania. Phew, there's nothing to dislike about Mexico or Canada. If anything, they are the ones that have to put up with us Americans. We are like the obnoxious, rich neighbor leaning over the fence. Hey dudes, want to come over and check out my new space program? Mexican food is one of the greatest accomplishments of mankind. But let's not forget Canada. I've always had a strange affinity for Canadians. They always seem so nice, calm, and health-insured. Because of their voluntarily living in perpetual winter and their almost absurd love for hockey, I've never understood the Canadian character until I ate poutine for the first time. Like that last scene in The Usual Suspects, all the pieces seem to come together. While poutine is a dish unique to Eastern Canada, Montreal, and Ottawa, the concoction of French fries covered in cheese curds and, for no apparent reason, gravy, clearly deciphers Canadian culture. First, heart-blocking poutine is the easiest explanation for Canada's adoption of universal healthcare coverage. I'm pretty sure I'm still digesting the poutine I had in May 2006. Poutine also serves as a sedative, making you so drowsy and serene you find yourself saying things like about instead of about. The extra pounds you immediately gain help shield you against the bitter climate. The irrational love of hockey still remains a mystery to me, but I'm convinced it has something to do with poutine. It's normal for me to make unhealthy food choices, but poutine almost appears sadomasochistic. Poutine seems like the result of someone's goal of making French fries even less healthy.
Well, the most unhealthy thing we could do is to cover the fries with every other food item that causes heart disease. Let's get to work.
And that is what some brilliant Canadian did. And the results were incredibly successful. It tastes as amazing as it is bad for you. I attended one of Ottawa's Poutine Fest. They had two this year, where 26 vendors find creative ways to serve poutine. There is Philly cheesesteak poutine, popcorn chicken poutine, and for some infuriating reason, vegetarian poutine. While I was eating my second portion of poutine, I actually heard my heart say, "Oh no! What are you doing? Are you mad at me?" I could feel my arteries tightening, but my brain said, "It's all right, it's all right. There's going to be some sweating. Well, a lot of sweating, but you'll get through it. Bowels, you can take the weekend off." In Ottawa, you can get the squeaky cheese that sounds like you are cleaning a window when you chew it. I always get smoked meat added to my poutine. It's not just the flavor of the smoked meat that I enjoy. It's also the fact that no effort is made to explain what type of smoked meat it is. The following is a conversation I had with a waitress in Montreal in 2008. "Me, this meat's amazing. What kind of meat is it?" Waitress: "Smoked meat." "Yeah, I know, but what kind of smoked meat?" "The delicious kind of smoked meat." "Sorry, I don't know what you're talking about, but I suddenly want to watch hockey." French fries as a condiment. Pittsburgh and Cleveland, while very different, share a common phenomenon. Besides the fact that they are both Rust Belt cities with a passion for football, they both have the strange and unique habit of putting French fries inside sandwiches. Sandwiches are normally one of the few items that do not come with French fries. Pittsburgh and Cleveland snuck them in. I don't know or care who did it first because it doesn't matter. It's like sneaking an extra person in the trunk into a drive-in movie. Putting fries in a sandwich is a beautiful thing. The efficiency and convenience of this idea is nothing short of brilliant. I'm not suggesting that these are the only two cities where this excellent behavior has occurred. It's just that it has been perfected in Pittsburgh and Cleveland. In Pittsburgh, I go to Promanti Brothers and get a ham sandwich with coleslaw and crispy French fries piled high between two pieces of soft Italian bread. I'm not sure which Promanti brother came up with the fries and the sandwich idea. Maybe the brothers had a meeting. "Okay, you jackoffs, we need to boost sandwich sales. Any ideas?" Brother 2: "How about Yin's guys put coleslaw on every sandwich?" Brother 1: "Interesting, maybe." Brother 3: "And French fries." "On a sandwich?" "Yeah, fries on a sandwich. Are you drunk again?" "No, but that's when I thought of it." In Cleveland, I love to eat at a place called Panini's that is legendary for putting fries and slaws in their sandwiches. This is different from the Pittsburgh version because in Cleveland, the sandwich is ironed. By the way, they love to drink in Cleveland, too. I imagine this is what you would call a happy accident, created when someone in Cleveland was eating the Pittsburgh-style sandwich while ironing and drinking at the same time. This idea is not too far-fetched, considering that in Cleveland, their river always catches on fire. Top microwave chef. Whenever a politician gives a speech about getting America working again, I always cringe a little. Not just because it's an empty political promise, but also because I'm not a fan of work in general. I usually think, ugh, I hope this work isn't going to involve movement. It better not be yard work. I'm a fan of relaxing, and when I get tired of relaxing, I like to do nothing. I view cooking as work. I don't enjoy cooking, so I don't follow the logic sometimes presented to me. "Hey, you love food, so you must enjoy cooking."
I also enjoy sleeping, but that doesn't mean I like making a bed. Thankfully, other people enjoy cooking. Even more thankfully, some other people really enjoy cooking. I guess I feel the same way about not cooking that these people feel about cooking. It's really a win-win for everyone involved, especially if the food is free. I occasionally enjoy watching people make food. It's relaxing, I guess. I have noticed that the Food Network is far more interesting when I'm hungry. When I'm full, I usually think, well, this cooking show is silly. Why would anyone watch this? But when I'm hungry, really hungry, the Food Network is amazing, a visual spectacle. I watch it like some of you degenerates watch porn. Oh, yeah, whip it up, baby. As you know by now, I'm an eater, not a cooker. Besides the microwave, I don't even know what half the stuff in my kitchen is for. Most kitchen appliances just feel like an unnecessary waste of space. Has anyone not on a cooking show ever used their blender for anything other than mixed drinks? Before I got married, I stored blankets in my oven. Yes, it was that nice of a place. Most of the times when I cook, I'm using a microwave, which of course is not cooking. It's just me pressing buttons and waiting for the bing. As I mentioned in my homemade hot dog recipe, I barely even know how to use a microwave. I've never tried to light one, but mostly all I know is you aren't supposed to put metal or wet cats in there. This is not a good thing, given I'm occasionally in charge of feeding a gaggle of small children. Okay, for lunch, here are your options. You can have hot dogs, popcorn, or cold hot dogs. The manufacturers understand there are people like me, which is why microwaves have buttons like reheat and popcorn. I once stayed in a hotel that had a microwave that had a dinner button. I pressed the dinner button, but when I opened the microwave door, there was no dinner there. I guess the microwave was broken. When I cook something in a microwave, I rarely read the directions on the packaging. That's right, I just wing it. I'm dangerous like that. I'm like the evil Knievel of microwave cooking. I don't even understand why some microwavable foods have instructions. If you're cooking a frozen burrito in a microwave, are you that interested in quality? It might as well say, toss this into the microwave for a little bit and then shove it in your mouth after it cools, you tub of gluttony. On Amy's Bowls, you are instructed to stop, rotate this dish, and stir the contents. Like that would happen. I might as well be making something from scratch out of the joy of cooking. If microwavable food has any directions beyond stick it in the microwave and press a button, I assume they're trying to add wording to the packaging to fill space. Boss, it's kind of empty on the back of the package. Maybe add some writing. Employee, about what? It's a burrito. I don't know. Tell people how to open the microwave door. The packaging is going to look weird without writing on it. Microwaves are like winter coats. They warm quickly, people never clean them, and they look ugly after a year. Nothing that you put in a microwave is that exciting. That's why there is always forgotten food in there. At times, a microwave just seems like a box to hide half-full cups of cold coffee in. The microwave is an odd way to cook anything when you think about it. From my uninformed viewpoint, it seems as though someone thought, hey, you know the technology of the atomic bomb? What if we use that to make popcorn? Museum of Food. If you are eating at home, this means you or someone you live with went to the grocery store. I've always had a strange attachment to grocery stores, and I don't say this just because many of my stand-up set lists are indistinguishable from my grocery store list. One summer in high school, I had the pleasure of working in a grocery store. My job title was Stock Boy, which involved stocking shelves with cans and boxes of food while I fielded never-ending questions from my well-intentioned but relentless born-again Christian co-workers. Have you been saved? If you died right now, would you go to heaven? Why are you putting headphones on? To make matters more inspiring, the soundtrack that played over the grocery store sound system that summer was a single cassette of country music's greatest hits, on repeat, all day, day after day. Near the end of August, I was a devout atheist who knew all the words to Elvira and never wanted to enter another grocery store. Elvira. I can't sing it for legal reasons, but you know what I mean. Now, by God's grace and probably thanks to the prayers of those born-again Christians, I love going to the grocery store. For me, it's like going to an art museum of food I've eaten. Ah, the work of Frito-Lay. What a lovely exhibit. Peanut butter and jelly in the same jar. A masterpiece. What is this double-stuffed Oreos? How abstract. In grocery stores, food is on display at its finest. All the produce is shiny and color-coordinated. All the boxes and cans are colorful and organized. I love the food packaging. It's like the clothing of food. Oh, what are you wearing there, Cookie? A lovely Mint Milano bag. Candy, let me help you remove your wrapper. It seems the fancier the food, the nicer the packaging. While Pepperidge Farm bread is packaged in the equivalent of a three-piece suit, generic cereal comes in plastic bags and lives on the bottom shelf like it's homeless. I always think we should find you a box to live in. The variety at most grocery stores is staggering. There are innumerable kinds of peanut butter, smooth, chunky, natural, sugar-free, crunchy, even extreme chunky. I'm pretty sure if I bought the extreme chunky, I'd open it up only to discover it was just peanuts. It would be extreme trying to spread those peanuts on bread. This is radical! The extreme products of any kind make you feel like a coward eating the regular stuff. Hey, look at that wimp eating regular Doritos. You can't handle the extreme Doritos, can you? I'm working my way up to it. Grocery stores show how complicated we humans have made food. Dogs would definitely conclude that we are really putting too much thought into this food thing. This is probably why dogs are not allowed in grocery stores. I'm happily married, but supposedly the grocery store is a great place for singles to meet. I'm not sure how this works.
I see you got the Charmin there in your car. It really is more absorbent. Want to grab a cup of coffee?
It's impossible to buy toilet paper without some level of embarrassment. We all need it, but I'm always self-conscious wheeling around the toilet paper in my cart. It normally comes in those giant 12-packs, and I feel like everyone is staring at me. Does that guy ever leave the bathroom? I never want to see anyone in the grocery store, let alone singles. I was only hit on once at the grocery store. I remember it was early one Saturday morning, and I was buying my daily bacon when I got tapped on the shoulder. I turned around and saw a rather short and feeble 80-year-old lady looking up at me. She said in a weak, scratchy voice, "Excuse me, young man, could you reach up and grab some ketchup for me?" Well, I'm no dummy. I know when I'm getting hit on. I smiled politely and reached up for the ketchup, knowing full well that she just wanted to get a gander at my derriere. As I handed her the ketchup, she said, "Thank you," like I was some piece of meat, a boy toy or something. Finally, I just blurted out, "Look, I'm married, lady." She acted all surprised and confused. "Excuse me, I don't understand." I shook my head with a smirk, raised my left hand, and showed her my wedding ring. "Married," I loudly told her. "I'm taken." A stock boy at the end of the aisle looked at us and inquired, "Is everything okay?" "I'm fine," I assured him. "I know how to deal with predators." Well, suddenly this sex-crazed lady got all angry at me, like I was out of line. She huffed off, "Well, I never. And you ain't gonna with me either." I yelled after her. I have to admit, it was nice to get the attention. One of my favorite parts of a visit to a grocery store is the free samples. Ooh, free sausage. Unfortunately, there is always that awkward moment after you consume a free sample. Before you get the sample, you usually act like you are considering buying the product. "Well, this would be good for a party." "Nah. Well, gotta go." Checking out at a grocery store can also be an awkward experience. The checkout person gets such a window into your personal life. I imagine they are judging me for everything I am buying. "Should you really be eating that? No wonder you're buying X-Lax." The total amount of the receipt seems to get higher and higher every time I check out at the grocery store, even though I feel like I'm buying less food. It's also become necessary for us all to be members of these grocery store clubs. Cashier: "Are you a member of our club?" Me: I'm just getting hot dogs." "That'll be $4,000. Or you can join our club." I can't come to a lot of meetings, but I guess I'll join." "It's really convenient. Just fill out this personal information for the next 10 minutes. I used to feel uncomfortable when the cashier would bag my groceries. Talk about feeling lazy. "Hey, thanks for putting my groceries in my bag. I could help, but I'll just watch." "Yeah, I'm pretty exhausted from picking that stuff out. You want to come home and watch me eat them? I'm looking for a friend." I now realize that the only thing more uncomfortable than someone bagging my groceries has to be bagging my own groceries at a self-service checkout. As I ring up my purchases, I always think, when is this shift going to be over? Sometimes I'll ask myself, "Hey, me, you want paper or plastic?" As I sing Elvira. Hot Pockets, A Blessing and a Curse. Okay, let's talk about the 800-pound stuffed pastry in the room.
If you don't know what a Hot Pocket is, all I can say is congratulations or welcome to North America. If you are a resident of North America and don't know what a Hot Pocket is, I can only assume you are so rich you haven't gone grocery shopping for 10 years, or you have such a healthy and constructive lifestyle that you only shop at farmers markets and don't watch television. Then again, you could also be another Unabomber. There is nothing unique or innovative about the Hot Pocket concept. It's fundamentally just meat with a pastry-like cover. This is nothing new. I remember initially looking at the Hot Pockets product I saw in a commercial and thinking, well, that's just a calzone. I imagined all the South Americans exclaiming, hey, that's our empanada, and the Jamaicans insisting, no, that's our meat pie. It seems like every culture has a version of the thing we Americans have come to call a Hot Pocket. While these other countries' dishes seem like real food with some special kind of history, the American version seems like a cheap imitation. The Hot Pocket is sort of a symbol of the way we eat in America. The early development of the Hot Pocket appears to have begun with the TV dinner, the hominid of the Hot Pocket evolutionary chain. In the middle of the last century, our lives got busier, and we got lazier in our food preparation habits. In the 1950s, the TV dinner made it possible for us to conveniently eat in front of our television. The microwave made it possible for us to make the TV dinner faster so we could watch more television. The Hot Pocket made it possible for us to eat something from the microwave without a fork while we watch television. I imagine intravenous food streaming from the television is about a decade away. It's almost embarrassing when I contemplate the impact Hot Pockets has had on my life. It truly has been a blessing and a curse. A blessing in that so many people relate so much to the series of jokes I wrote about this relatively simple microwavable food item that it changed my career. And a curse in that I certainly don't need more people yelling, Hot Pocket, at me in the airport. I'm never sure how I'm supposed to respond. Thanks? Once I was on CNN speaking seriously about the good work that the Bob Woodruff Foundation does on behalf of veterans, and unbeknownst to me at the time, on the bottom of the screen, I was identified as Jim Hot Pocket Gaffigan. I have no doubt that if an obituary were to be written about me at this point in my life, I would be remembered as the Hot Pocket comedian. Whether I like it or not, Hot Pockets changed my life. I might not be doing stand-up in theaters or writing this book if in the late 90s I didn't find the commercial for Hot Pockets so ridiculous. What seems like 100 years ago, I was doing a spot at Caroline's Comedy Club in New York City. It was a showcase in which typically 5 or 6 comedians go up and do 15-minute sets of stand-up. It was a great opportunity to mix in new stuff with tried-and-true material while performing at a prestigious club. I had recently thought of a couple of jokes about a new product I had been seeing advertised a lot on television. The product was Hot Pockets. I thought the name was hilarious. Hot Pockets sounded like a euphemism for a sexual disorder. Grandpa to teenager. Look, Bobby, sometimes when fellas don't go on dates, they develop what we call a Hot Pocket. Doesn't mean you're bad, it just means you need a girlfriend. I used to have Hot Pockets all the time, and then I met your grandmother. I thought the commercial was even more preposterous. It showed an overly happy mother pulling something out of a microwave that looked like a McDonald's apple pie and handing it to her overly happy son. Then there was the equally absurd, enthusiastic two-word jingle, Hot Pockets. The commercial felt more like a Saturday Night Live parody than an actual commercial. I was simultaneously annoyed, amused, and intrigued. Who in their right mind would buy this product? I cobbled together a couple of jokes and did them that night on the stage at Caroline's. They got a couple of laughs in front of the late-night audience of local New Yorkers. Nothing remarkable, nothing memorable. When I got off stage, I approached my friend and host for the evening, Vic Henley. That Hot Pocket stuff is funny, Vic exclaimed. I said thanks, thinking he was just being nice. But then Vic repeated, no, it's funny. Encouragement from another comedian you respect is really all most comedians are looking for when they are starting out. Rather than tossing aside a few observations, I began to gather more jokes on this odd product, Hot Pockets. I think I got lucky with the timing of my Hot Pocket jokes. I got to them before other comedians realized the absurdity of the product. I certainly didn't expect Hot Pockets to gain the popularity it did. In hindsight, the success of Hot Pockets is perfectly logical. When I was a teenager, everyone ate frozen burritos that were heated up in a microwave. Usually the tortilla of the burrito tasted like cardboard, but it was easy to make. Hot pockets were the next logical step. Something anyone could easily cook in the microwave that was edible. Well, kind of. I actually buy Hot Pockets. I go into grocery stores, head over to the freezer section, and think, yeah, I'll get these. I've never eaten a Hot Pocket and then afterwards been, I'm glad I ate that. I was thinking, I'm going to die. I paid for that? Did I eat it or rub it on my face? My back hurts. Ow. Wait, my watch stopped? Hot Pockets should have a warning on the package. Warning, you just bought Hot Pockets. I hope you're drunk or heading home to a trailer, you hillbilly. Enjoy the next NASCAR event. People sometimes ask if the Hot Pockets people have sued me or contacted me. The answer is no. I think the good people at Nestle know Hot Pockets are not being paired with champagne. You rarely see Hot Pockets on a menu when you go out to dinner. Let's see, I'll have the Caesar salad and a Hot Pocket. You will never overhear the following conversation in a fine dining establishment. Waiter, today's specials, we have a Chilean sea bass, which is sautéed in a lemon brûlée blanc. And we have a Hot Pocket that is cooked in a dirty microwave, and that comes with a side of Pepto. Patron, is your Hot Pocket cold in the middle? It's frozen, but it can be served boiling lava hot. Will it burn my mouth? It'll destroy your mouth. Everything will taste like rubber for a month. Oh, I'll get the Hot Pocket. Hot Pockets have not been in the public consciousness for that long. I saw a winner on The Price is Right win a lifetime supply of Hot Pockets, which I'm pretty sure is technically a death sentence. Now Hot Pockets are part of our culture. When they came out, I never imagined there would be over 40 different flavors of Hot Pockets, with new products being introduced on what seems to be a daily basis. Given the innumerable varieties of Hot Pockets available, people could play a game of Hot Pocket Roulette, in which a variety of Hot Pocket flavors are taken out of the packaging and placed in the freezer. Then the roulette participant can randomly choose a frozen Hot Pocket from the freezer. They have no idea what flavor or variety they will get until that first scorching bite. Actually, that wouldn't really be a fun game, because no one would ever be sure which flavor of Hot Pocket they had chosen, given that they all pretty much taste the same. At times, it feels like Hot Pockets are in the news more often than the latest tabloid starlet. Recently, a large recall of Hot Pockets was instituted because they were found to contain unsound meat. To many of us who eat Hot Pockets, this was neither shocking nor newsworthy. I remember thinking, I guess next they're going to tell us smoking is bad for us. Mostly Hot Pockets are in the news for what humans do to a Hot Pocket or for a Hot Pocket. There was an almost biblical story of a teen who stabbed his older brother over a Hot Pocket in South Bend. There was another one about a college student at the University of Notre Dame who broke into a health spa and ate Hot Pockets. I'm less shocked that this behavior took place in my home state of Indiana, and more surprised that a health spa was selling Hot Pockets.
After your therapeutic massage, may I interest you in a Hot Pocket cleanse?
It wasn't that long ago Hot Pockets were probably just a twinkle in some drunk guy's eye. Or maybe some guy in a marketing meeting asked, how about a Pop-Tart filled with nasty meat? No, really, this is different from my fish stick and a Twinkie idea. This would come in a sleeve. Hot Pockets come in a crisping sleeve thingy. I don't recommend microwaving your Hot Pocket without the sleeve. I did that once and blew up my house. It takes 3 minutes to cook a Hot Pocket in a microwave. Coincidentally, that is how long it stays in your system. I believe if it took any longer to cook, people would have time to change their mind and eat something else. Well, it's done. I might as well eat it. It actually takes 5 minutes because you're supposed to let the Hot Pocket cool for 2 minutes before eating it, which can be hard because if you're like me, you want to feel sick right away. Even if you haven't eaten a Hot Pocket, you are probably familiar with the jingle, Hot Pocket. It's not a very complicated jingle. It's as if someone had just been asked to sing the words Hot Pocket. I'm not a music expert, but it seems like it's just three consecutive descending notes, like something a four-year-old would play on a recorder. I can't imagine that songwriter worked very hard on that jingle. Hot Pocket executive, Bill, what do you have so far on the Hot Pocket jingle?
Was that due today?
Yes. Do you have something?
Yes.
Well?
Hot Pockets.
That's good. Not as good as your Buy Menon jingle, but it's good. Now, what are we going to run in Mexico?
Caliente pocket.
You've got a gift, my friend. Don't hide that under a bushel.
There really is a Hot Pocket for everyone. Vegetarian Hot Pocket. There are vegetarian Hot Pockets for those of us who don't want to eat meat but would still like uncontrollable explosive diarrhea. I always wondered if Hot Pockets were not just some elaborate scheme by the toilet paper manufacturers. Lean Pocket. A Lean Pocket is a healthy version of the flagship Hot Pocket. I don't even want to know what's in the Lean Pocket. I imagine the directions, take out of box, place directly in toilet. Flush Pocket. Possible slogan, half the calories, all the diarrhea. Breakfast Pocket. My favorite is the Breakfast Hot Pocket, because I can't think of a better way to start the day. Good morning! You're about to call in sick. The creative team at Hot Pockets has made it possible for you to have a Hot Pocket for breakfast, a Hot Pocket for lunch, and be dead by dinner. Whole Wheat Hot Pocket. Now there are Whole Wheat Hot Pockets, as if that is what was holding some of us back. I'm waiting for the healthy diarrhea. Deli Style Hot Pocket. There is a Deli Style Hot Pocket that is made with real deli meat. This version only made me question what type of meat they were using before the Deli Style Hot Pocket. Isn't regular meat the same as deli meat?
No, before it was iguana meat.
Hot Pocket Sliders. There are Hot Pocket Sliders. This seems a little redundant. I expected White Castle to issue a press release that simply read, "Really?" Hot Pocket Sub. I have no idea what this is, but I assume the Hot Pocket Sub combines the disgusting meat of regular Hot Pockets with stale bread. Croissant Hot Pocket. As if the French need another reason to hate us. Chicken Pot Pie Hot Pocket. A couple of years ago, when I saw a commercial for a Chicken Pot Pie Hot Pocket, I just assumed they were messing with us. I naively believed that they had run out of new product ideas. A Chicken Pot Pie Hot Pocket? I figured it was just a matter of time before I'd hear someone ask, "Have you tried the Hot Pocket Hot Pocket? It's a Hot Pocket filled with a Hot Pocket. It tastes just like a Hot Pocket. I'm going to go stick my head in a microwave." Hot Stuffs. I perform regularly in Canada. A couple of years ago, someone showed me the Canadian version of a Hot Pocket. It was called Hot Stuffs. It still confuses me how the Canadians somehow came up with a worse name than we did. Hot Stuffs? Aren't the Americans supposed to be the dumb ones in North America? In the average box of Hot Pockets, there are usually two Hot Pockets, one for you to eat and regret, and one to have in the freezer until you move. Or you can use the Hot Pocket as a measuring stick on how drunk you've gotten that night. Man opens freezer, looks at Hot Pocket.
"Yeah, I'm not eating that. I'm all right to drive. Let's head to Waffle House."
He's here. Getting food delivered to my home combines two of my favorite activities, eating and not moving. There is something pretty pathetic about my ordering delivery. I usually have food in the next room that I could put in a microwave, but the task seems too daunting. I'm also normally ordering from places that are only a short walk away from my New York City apartment. "Yeah, I like your food, just not enough to go down there and get it." The worst part of delivery for me is getting up and answering the door. Well, this is a pain in the ass. Who am I, the butler? Well, at least I don't have to put on pants. Apparently, I am not the only one being lazy about how I obtain my food. It used to be that pizza and Chinese restaurants were the only places that offered delivery. Now you can get just about anything delivered to your home. This is a pretty clear indication that as a society, we are getting lazier. It's only a matter of time before we are on the phone. "Yeah, I'd like to get a delivery, and I'm going to need someone to feed me." No, I'll be in the tub." "Yeah, the key's under the mat. Chip, chap, chap." Given the amount of delivery I get, you'd think I'd be better at ordering. I spend embarrassing amounts of time strategizing about what I want to eat, only to call up and find out they've stopped delivering at that hour. Generally, I'm bad at ordering food over the phone. I think I'm ready, but I never am. It doesn't help that the guy on the other end of the phone is always impatient. "Delivery, what do you want? You got food there? Yeah, what do you want? Let me call you back. I have to write it down. I wasn't ready for these trick questions." I understand that many people order food online with their computer, which I think is unnatural and un-American. Do you think George Washington ordered his Thai food on a laptop? Of course not.
He called on the phone and dealt with the person who didn't speak English because he was a patriot. The most exciting part of the ordering process is when the delivery guy rings your buzzer or knocks on your door. It's like Santa has arrived at your house. He's here! He's here! The delivery guy's here! You know, when I open the door, I don't treat the delivery guy like he's Santa. I behave like I'm in the middle of a hostage exchange. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You wait there at the door. Here's the deal. I'll give you the money, you hand over the food, then I want you to back away slowly. I don't need you casing the joint. Then there's the awkward decision about how much you tip the delivery guy. Everyone knows that at a restaurant, a 20% tip is appropriate. Who's supposed to give us the guidelines for the delivery guy's tip? I always feel like saying, look, I'll give you 20% if you stay here and wait on me while I eat. Could you do something about the music in here and bring me a glass of water right away? In reality, the delivery guy should probably get more of a tip, since they're going outside and getting in a car or on a bike, and in my case, carrying my food up 5 flights of stairs, which is actually way more than a waiter does. But still, you just give him a couple of bucks and loudly lock the door behind him so you can open the paper bag and start eating your delivery before it gets cold. I don't know why they include all the extra crap in the delivery bag. Even if I've only ordered food for one person, they still always stuff in 25 of the flimsiest paper plates imaginable and a bunch of tiny plastic utensils that look like they would break while cutting butter, and that I imagine are from the stockroom of a prison. Why are they bringing disposable utensils to a home that presumably has a full-functioning kitchen? It's not like I'm ordering from a campsite. Judging from the poor quality of these free items, I'm guessing that they are just trying to get rid of them. What should we do with these 5,000 worthless plates? Just stuff them in the fat guy's bag. Let him throw them away. He's lazy enough to be ordering food from a block away, so he probably doesn't care about the environment. Also in the bag of the delivered food is usually a menu for the restaurant. What is the purpose of that? Didn't I just order from the menu? I didn't just guess what they had at the restaurant. Did they get too many menus printed and they are hiding the mistake from their boss? I also have about 5,000 pairs of chopsticks that came with random deliveries cluttering up my drawers. Who the hell is using chopsticks when they eat by themselves? Everyone knows you only eat with chopsticks to show off when you are actually in a restaurant. Also in the delivery slash garbage bag are enough condiment packets to get you through a zombie apocalypse. I never know what to do with all the packets. I feel bad throwing them out, but it's not like I can give them to a homeless guy.
In case you ever get that food you're begging for, here's some ketchup.
Aside from these minor inconveniences, getting delivery remains my favorite non-sleeping activity. I mean, besides eating cheese.
Say cheese.
Drinking milk is rather disgusting when you think about it. We are, in simple terms, drinking the breast milk of a cow. Growing up, we all heard, drink your milk. I wonder how we would have responded if our mothers had said, don't forget to drink that liquid that comes from one of the cow's 6 nipples. By that last statement, I may have just killed any opportunity for me to do one of those creepy dot milk campaigns. I still don't understand why that advertising campaign worked. Oh, this actor or athlete has a disgusting milk mustache. I guess I'll buy some milk. Some people can't drink milk or ingest any dairy because they are lactose intolerant. For a short period, I thought I was lactose intolerant because one night I drank 4 milkshakes and my stomach hurt pretty bad. Eventually, I remembered I had also eaten 4 green chili hamburgers that probably had bad meat in them. If you are lactose intolerant, you shouldn't be ashamed. It just means your sensitive tummy can't handle that spicy milk. Do you have anything milder than milk, but not water? That gives me the runs. While I find milk generally unappealing, what we make from cow's breast milk is truly amazing. Cheese, ice cream, whipped cream, butter. Cow's breast milk is really rather resourceful. Cheese is probably the most all-purpose dairy product. Everyone loves cheese. Supposedly the average American eats 23 pounds of cheese a year. That seems kind of low to me. I guess I'm making up for the non-cheese eaters. I'm not referring to the rugged lactose intolerant folk. I'm including the people who don't like cheese. I don't mean little kids or people who don't like really stinky blue cheese. I'm talking about people who don't like any cheese. I know, I can't believe these people exist either. These are usually the same people who don't like foods of certain colors or shapes. I don't like eating food that is yellow or square hamburgers. These food-complaining people are the first people I would eat if I were in the Donner Party. even though they probably wouldn't taste as delicious as people who ate everything. To me, cheese is fantastic, and I've always loved it. I remember when I was a little kid, I was kind of surprised when I realized the word cheesy was a negative. My older sister Kathy was complaining to a friend over the phone, "Yeah, that movie was kind of cheesy." This didn't make sense to the young me. I wanted to ask, what kind of cheese? Cheese in a movie sounded ideal to me. I wondered, did they have crackers, too? Part of me is relieved that eating tons of cheese makes you feel sick, so you stop. Otherwise, I might be dead right now. This is a letter I recently wrote to a block of cheddar I met the night before. Dear Cheddar, last night was a mistake. Maybe it was the wine, but I acted impulsively, and now I'm feeling a lot of shame and guilt, and frankly, my stomach hurts. I know I said I wanted to see you again tonight, but I can't. It's not going to happen. I just can't. Look, it was fun. I might even describe it as delicious, but it's over. Just because something is delicious and makes me feel whole for a moment does not mean it's good for me. Fine, I'll see you in the kitchen at 2 a.m. Jeez. Yours truly, Jim. Types of cheese. Generally, I like all types of cheese. Even the really stinky cheese that makes you almost gag before every delicious bite. On more than one occasion, I've thought to myself, this smell makes me want to hurl, but I can't stop eating it. Let me give you a quick overview that you didn't ask for on my feelings on the more popular cheeses. Cheddar. When I'm lying in bed thinking about cheese, which is usually every night, I'm typically thinking about cheddar cheese. It is the utility cheese. It works great everywhere. Great on a hamburger, great on a sandwich, even great with a piece of apple pie. Wow, you go, cheddar. When I say cheddar, I'm talking about sharp cheddar. I usually look for extra sharp cheddar, whatever that means. I just know the sharper the cheddar, the better. I don't understand why mild cheddar even exists. It's like the non-alcoholic beer of cheddar. What's the point? Blue cheese. I feel I became an adult when I started enjoying blue cheese. My siblings and I would cringe and snicker when my dad would order a salad with blue cheese as a dressing. Is he crazy? Blue cheese is an acquired taste, and I acquired it. It's not my daily cheese, but it's one of my favorites. It's hard to describe how I feel about blue cheese. Blue cheese is like the ice cream sundae of cheese. On a first-class flight, they should fill the parfait cup with only blue cheese. No nuts on mine, please. My favorite blue cheese is St. Agour's Buttercream Blue. I'm pretty sure St. Agour's was the Catholic saint of blue cheese. Swiss. I've always viewed Swiss cheese as the grapefruit juice of cheese. Nobody really wants Swiss cheese, but it's nice to provide a choice for the occasional weirdo who wants something gross tasting. I keep waiting for people to realize that Swiss cheese tastes like a pencil eraser. Swiss cheese is like an old dirty sock. It smells, it has holes in it, and if it's hanging on a doorknob, it means do not enter. Brie. I was slow to get on the Brie bandwagon. I was never sure if I was supposed to eat the skin or the shell or rind thing. Now I can eat 3 or 4 wheels of brie during one episode of The Biggest Loser. I like the fact that cheese is one of the only food items that comes in a wheel. The cheese wheel is one of the greatest inventions since the actual wheel. Goat cheese. I'm a reluctant goat cheese consumer. I understand it's the healthy cheese, a description that always makes me distrustful, but I can't get beyond the fact that it comes from a goat. A goat? Goats always seem like characters from one of those Lord of the Rings movies. Hey, you know that disgusting animal you'd never eat? Check out what we did with some of its breast milk. American cheese. I don't want to create a Dixie Chick style cheese controversy here, but I hate American cheese. Hate it. I love my country, not just because it's God's favorite, but I don't understand American cheese. Maybe the idea was, let's make a cheese that resembles real cheese but has no taste. You know, for people who like to melt things and hate themselves. Like a responsible citizen, I confronted this issue head on by writing a letter to Kraft. Dear Kraft, I hope you are well. I wanted to write you regarding American cheese. I'd like you to stop making it, please. It's disgusting and completely unsatisfying. Let me be clear up front. I'm a huge fan of cheese. I love cheese. I realize an out-of-shape Midwestern guy like myself enjoying cheese this much might be rare, but I don't care. I love cheese. When I'm getting my picture taken and someone tells me to say cheese, I smile because the word cheese actually makes me happy. I've gone to wine and cheese events just for the cheese. I bet if cows could talk and were asked what dairy product they are most proud of, they would say cheese. Let's admit, ice cream is too reliant on sugar. Cows even look like they eat a lot of cheese. I love all kinds of cheese, too, except for American cheese. American cheese is the worst of all cheeses. Well, to be honest, I've never tried head cheese. That sounds like it would be pretty bad. I guess I'm not interested in eating any cheese that has a body part in the name. Frankly, I was shocked when I recently learned that head cheese was not an actual cheese. Graf, didn't you think head cheese was a cheese and some lame casual slang description for the president of an organization? Surprised me, too. Can you believe they named a terrin of flesh from the head of an animal cheese? Isn't that like taking the name of cheese in vain? If I were you, Kraft, I would sue the head cheese people for copyright infringement. Wouldn't it be awkward if the person who came up with head cheese was reading this? Hey, my last name is Head. I wanted to name it after myself. Jeez, this Jim Gaffigan is really mean, but he sure is good looking. Anyway, back to American cheese, which, while slightly better than head cheese, is disgusting. It doesn't even taste like cheese. I think the plastic that you individually wrap the slices in is tastier. You say in your commercials there is some part of a glass of milk in every slice. Is it the glass? I think that blocks of American cheese should be banned from the deli, where it sits like an imposter hiding among the real cheese. Your cheese product kind of resembles cheese, but let's be honest, it's not even cheese. Why are you lying to our children? American cheese is like one of those fake presents that is just an empty box and wrapping paper I opened at the mall entrance last December. Okay, here's the real reason you have to stop. Your so-called cheese is unpatriotic. Really? This is the cheese America gets? This great country that gave birth to the telephone, the car, and Jesus gets your so-called American cheese? It seems like every country contributed some important cheese. Even England, which almost prides itself on their nasty, bland food, has Stilton blue cheese and cheddar. Yet, all America comes up with is the shiny, gelled orange grease squares? In summation, your American cheese is tasteless, fake, and anti-American. If you can't stop making it, is it too much to ask you to change the name to Al-Qaeda cheese or I Can Believe It's Not Cheese cheese? Kraft, I hope this letter will not stop you from coming to one or all of my theater shows. Your friend, Jim. By the way, those jerks at Kraft never got back to me. I think I can sue for that, right? Other versions of cheese. Vegan cheese. You'd think with all our technological advances, we'd be able to figure out a way to make edible non-dairy cheese. We can pretend to put a man on the moon, but we can't create a non-dairy cheese that doesn't taste like rubber. Genius purchased every type of healthy cheese created, and they always make me prefer no cheese. Cheese curds. I don't really understand what cheese curds are. I guess they are like the cookie dough of cheese. Either way, cheese curds sound pretty unhealthy and are a key element of the Canadian national treasure, poutine. In Wisconsin, they have deep-fried cheese curds, which taste like French fries and heaven had a baby. Spray cheese. We want our food easy. I've always found pre-sliced cheese rather pathetic. Nobody likes the double meaning of the term cut the cheese, but even I've never been too lazy to take a knife to cheese. But we are a lazy bunch. How else would you explain spray cheese? I suppose there are some people who are like, you know, I like cheese, but it's just too much work. You have to open it up, take the cheese out, slice the cheese. I don't have time for that. I have a job. I'd be willing to eat cheese if I could press something and have it just spray out. Maybe if I could write with it. Occasionally, I have to sign some checks to Mayor McCheese. And as you know, he only takes cheese checks. Cheese Whiz. Cheese Whiz is a cheese that comes in a jar that you can keep on a shelf. Apparently, jar cheese is for people who are tired of throwing out cheese that has gone bad. This makes me wonder how long it takes some people to eat cheese. Do you want this year's cheese or the cheese from 10 years ago? I'm less taken aback that there is a cheese that comes in a jar and more astounded that there is a product actually named Cheese Whiz. The people at Kraft must have been a little surprised that the product worked. Wow, people are actually buying that Cheese Whiz stuff. It was meant as an April Fool's prank. When they came up with the name Cheese Whiz, don't you think there would have been one person at that meeting who would have said, this cheese in a jar is an interesting idea, but obviously we're not going to call it Cheese Whiz, right? It makes you wonder how bad the names were that they turned down before deciding on Cheese Whiz. Boss. Okay, let me hear your pitches for the jar cheese name. Employee, how about cheese squirts? Or maybe, how about cheese runs?
We need something gross that also communicates easy to use.
Cheese whiz?
Brilliant. Cheese whiz it is. Now get back to working on names for that jar of fluffy marshmallow insides.
There are innumerable varieties of cheese. Most of them are too fancy for me to understand, so instead of discussing the rest of them here, I will just continue my research by eating them. There is cheese from just about every country in the world except China. No cheese from China? Maybe tofu is Chinese cheese. No wonder there was a cultural revolution. Crackers, the adult junk food. Crackers are the junk food of adults. There are so many different types of crackers for adults to eat while they congratulate themselves for not eating potato chips. Of course, kids like crackers, too. My children seem to enjoy goldfish crackers and those Annie's Bunny's crackers because apparently food shaped like an animal tastes better to kids. Whenever I eat my children's goldfish crackers to make sure they're not poisonous, I'm always a little relieved they don't taste like fish. The bunnies don't taste as good as real bunnies either. Growing up, my family couldn't afford goldfish crackers, or in a less romantic version, my mom didn't buy them. I remember eating saltine crackers as a kid. I'd grab a sleeve of saltines, eat them one by one, and pretend I was in jail. Even as a child, I had an active imagination and a strange appetite. People don't really eat saltine crackers these days. They are mostly known for being the free stuff you get with soup or what you eat when you're sick. I imagine saltines will have a comeback. If there are gourmet donuts, there might as well be gourmet saltines. These are Himalayan salt artisanal saltines and cost $10 a cracker. When I was a teenager, my mom upgraded the family to Ritz crackers, which I guess she felt were classier than saltines, even though I'm pretty sure Ritz crackers have nothing to do with the Ritz-Carlton hotel chain. I wanted her to buy Doritos, Cheetos, and Fritos, but when I recommended that we get those, my mother looked at me like I suggested we move to a trailer park. My mom was a classy lady, and Ritz crackers were more her style. Ritz crackers do seem less pathetic than a bag of chips or saltines, but of course they're not. They're still crackers. Occasionally when I was out with my teenage friends, I'd buy Cheez-Its, which still remains the worst name ever for crackers. The appeal of Cheez-Its was that they were covered with a greasy cheese powder that was so toxic it would stain your fingers. They were a lot like that other junky stuff I was not allowed to eat at home, but they were disguised as crackers, which had a much better perception than chips and puffs. I think probably it was Cheez-Its that first taught me why crackers actually existed. They are the perfect platform for cheese. Triscuits. Now that I'm an adult, one of my favorite snacks is cheese and crackers. At a certain point, Jeannie, in an attempt to curb my cheese and cracker eating behavior, started buying Triscuits because they are a healthier cracker and hummus, a dip made out of chickpeas. While not a perfect substitute for cheese, hummus is pretty good. It comes in a variety of flavors, and you feel less guilty about eating a 17-ounce tub of hummus than you do about eating a 17-ounce tub of Merck's cheese spread. I should clarify, I don't eat Triscuits because they taste good. I eat them because Jeannie makes me. Triscuits are just shredded wheat in cracker form. I always tell myself, these are mostly air, no calories in air. Hearing something is better for me always gives me license to eat five times as much. Being a late-night eater, I can hardly fathom how many Triscuits I've consumed. I'm sure the number is in the hundreds of thousands at this point. I wish I were exaggerating. I eat them like I'm training for some impending Triscuit eating contest. If there were a frequent eating program for Triscuits, I'd earn so many miles that I'd spend every other weekend in Hawaii. I typically eat Triscuits only at night. On an average night, I'll do a stand-up show, go home, help Jeannie get our five children to sleep, and then sit down and eat five boxes of Triscuits. If I were murdered at my computer, there would most likely be a box of Triscuits in the crime scene photos. Lately, Jeannie has only been buying reduced-fat Triscuits, which are just like regular Triscuits, but even less satisfying. Wheat Thins. There are Triscuit people, and there are Wheat Thins people. Everyone has his or her own brand of soda, Coke or Pepsi, ketchup, Heinz or Hunt's, and toothpaste, Crest or Colgate. We are a Triscuit family. Wheat Thins also have a healthy perception, but mostly because they are smaller, thinner, and I guess, wheatier than most crackers. Well, there's even thin in the name. I'm sure there is some delineating attribute that separates the Trisket folk from the Wheat Thins folk. All I know is Trisket eaters are better looking. The Royal Treatment.